every action that every company in the world takes is going to make a difference. And I truly believe that the speed at which we're moving perhaps is too slow. So that sense of urgency needs to increase. It's business as usual, in a sense, is no longer applicable.
Welcome to the Interline Podcast. Now, sustainability is a big word with some big implications, but as we've seen from some recent headlines, it's also a word that gets thrown around pretty recklessly, getting applied where it really doesn't belong. Now, the same goes for transparency, right? It's almost universally agreed that the near-term future is going to place a requirement on brands and retailers to make radical disclosures about their supply chains, about their sourcing and procurement processes, and about the raw materials and labor that make up their products. But as everybody knows, the gap between making a statement and actually backing it up can be pretty substantial. So for this show, I'm talking to a brand that's tackling both of these massive words head on, Icebreaker. Renowned for creating uncompromising performance garments from natural materials, especially merino wool, Icebreaker is also known for its commitment to transparency, which is a philosophy they put on display every year in the Open Book Transparency Report that they publish. To coincide with the publication of the 2021-2022 installment of that report, I spent some time chatting to Icebreaker's Senior Manager of Global Materials and Sustainability, Jordi Benietta-Ferre, who's based in the heartland of the brand, New Zealand. We discussed how fashion's drifted away from the real definitions of sustainability and transparency, how brands, retailers, and their suppliers might get back on track, why taking action in those areas is so important to begin with, and why, when it comes to the big questions, nature has the answers. Now, this conversation leans heavily towards the material side of sustainability and transparency. But like I mentioned before, there's also the labor portion to consider. That's another area where there's a pressing need to replace approximation with accurate data. Now, that sort of visibility is going to be fundamental to any brand or retailer's aim to make confident statements around fair and living wages, and it's already critical to costing products effectively. The sponsor of this episode, Coats Digital, creates solutions that can transform the sustainability equation at both the material and the labor levels. The GSD framework and the GSD cost platform are both universally recognized scientific methods of quantifying labor operations and accurately costing garments. And Coats Digital's brand new solution, Fast React Fabric, is targeted at helping the fashion industry drastically reduce its fabric waste at the same time as enhancing bottom line profits for brands and their suppliers. Those solutions are both parts of Coats Digital's robust, multifaceted ecosystem of best-in-class technologies, tools that empower brands and manufacturers to harness the power of meaningful data and insights, and to then use those insights to solve critical supply chain pain points quickly and seamlessly, all of which is designed to ensure that sustainable operational excellence is maintained long-term. You can find out more at coatsdigital.com. Now, back to my conversation with Jordi from Icebreaker. I think a lot of people now don't really see a future for fashion that isn't sustainable, you know, a future that doesn't achieve some equilibrium with the planet. But, you know, sometimes it feels like the market doesn't really recognize that, hence the dominance of fast fashion. But today, more than ever, consumers are becoming more interested in and more invested in the journeys their products have taken. I'm guessing you believe that that sort of awareness is going to translate into greater action on consumers' part over time. But I'm interested to see where you think the balance of change in sustainability and transparency is going to come from. Is it going to come from, you know, heightened consumer awareness? Is it going to come from external factors like tightened regulations that have to hold fashion to account? Or is it going to come from a combination of all those things?
Yeah, good question. I do think is the third one. Like it's a combination of everything. Like I do believe that consumers will drive the demand for more sustainable products, and then it will be a bit of a natural selection from products that are clearly non-sustainable. I truly hope that eventually will become a bit of a like a marginalized thing, like the consumer will decide I'm no longer interested in this type of products because I know the impact that they have in the planet. But obviously there is a lot of very fast change and very fast action comes when regulation comes into place. So in terms of companies turning around their practices in a fast and effective manner, regulation is needed for sure. And the more the countries start to bring on in that regulation, the more accountability, the more scrutiny there is in the way we produce our products, I think the more action is going to happen and more companies will invest in this type of sustainability initiatives or not. It doesn't have to be even sustainable. It's like our day-to-day practices need to change. Sustainability cannot be something we do on the side. Sustainability has to be a mindset of how we do business. And we need to change, all of us, our mentality to become that future-proof way of producing things.
You've just released your 2021/22 transparency report, and there's a huge amount of detail in there. So I'm interested, what prompted you to go into that sort of depth, and what do you consider to be the key findings from examining your supply chain and your ways of working to that level of detail?
The transparency report is something that is not new for us. We started back in 2017. And I remember the post-it on the wall when we were sort of brainstorming about, you know, how could this look like? And one of the key post-it that stood in the middle of the wall is, what if our consumers could see everything we do here? So like, okay, that's actually the way to go about it. We need to do business in a manner that if one day we decide to put it all down in a report, we are proud of it. So that's how we started with the report, and it sort of drove as well the way we operated all year round to make sure that, hey guys, we're gonna have to report on this, so we better always make the right choice, right? So that's how we started. And then, as you said, the writing the report every year is like a deep look into our own business. And we go and scrutinize everything and we look at everything we've done in the past year. And sometimes it flashes out things that we are not quite happy about. And it's really good because, you know, when you know about it, you take action. And for the most part, I have to say that it's usually quite a seamless process. You know, we take all our supply chain, we understand, okay, guys, you're still doing great. Let's publish all the supply list. And then, you know, we are giving that transparency to the consumer to say, have a look at the back of our report. If you, all the people that we're using to make the product that you eventually purchase, we feel confident about it, but, you know, we're also happy to share it. And as you said, be accountable for it. Everything that we are sharing, we are accountable for, and that is fine. That is a responsibility that we are happy to carry. And if we are flagged for something that perhaps needs changing, that's a good thing, because then we know and we proceed to change it. It's a call for action always.
Okay, perfect. That's a really good answer. And I guess my follow-on question would be, what is there that you haven't been able to find the answers for yet? I mean, where, if anywhere, do gaps still exist in the visibility you have into product journeys, transparency, traceability?
Having worked in many other companies, I feel the visibility that Icebreaker has is second to none, in a sense. You know, we have visibility over our supply chain from the people that are growing our merino wool to the people that are treating those wool tops into fibers, and then the spinners, the fabric maker, the garment maker. So we do have a pretty close eye on everything that is happening in our supply chain. In a sense, at the moment, I don't see major gaps, but it's something that we need to keep very on top of, because as our business grows, obviously our supply chain will expand, and that visibility needs to be maintained. So it's to be able to maintain the level of visibility that we have now, we will have to work very hard and keep, you know, having very high standards on auditing our factories, on making sure that everyone we're working with is compliant with all our policies, all the policies from our mother company, VF, and such. So not big gaps. I don't think there is any big gap at the moment, but certainly lots of work to continue to keep having that visibility.
Perfect. And I think that plays into one of the parts about the transparency report I liked the most was the the commitment to long-term, decades-long relationships with suppliers and with producers and with growers. Because there's a big question in the industry around now around kind of supply chain diversification, and there's a lot of kind of short-term relationships that are established to try and mitigate risk maybe, or to take advantage of opportunity. I think Icebreaker's philosophy of having fewer suppliers but better relationships is, it's kind of counter to the way that a lot of fashion sourcing and supply chains run normally, but I think it might also just be ahead of the curve. Like, what's your perspective on that?
You're right. Like, compared to other companies, our supply chain is relatively small. And I think it's by necessity, because, you know, us being so specialized in merino wool and going like, we will take merino wool only of a specific certification from New Zealand, South Island, from our growers, and then moving all that wool through the supply chain, it, you know, you need to work with very few, very specialized partners to make sure you're maintaining the quality and the integrity of the product. So it's, you know, we try to work only with those partners that have a high level of specialization in merino. And that, unfortunately, narrows the spectrum of the amount of people that we can work with, right? It's, you know, it's, there is not that option of just going shopping in the market and going like, oh yeah, I'll take this fabric here, this fabric there, whatever. Because we want to have our wool specified into the fabrics, and we want to control also the type of yarn that we make. We narrow ourselves, but at the same time, we protect ourselves from losing quality or losing traceability over our fiber and our products.
And I think you're mitigating uncertainty and risk in a different way, whereas an organization with a more complex kind of multifaceted supply chain, they might be sort of mitigating uncertainty by working with as many different suppliers as possible, keeping as many doors open as possible. In your case, it's a matter of forging deeper, longer lasting relationships with suppliers, with growers. And could you tell us a little bit about your commitment to, you know, regenerative agriculture, regenerative wool, and the whole ZQRX program? Just give me an overview of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it also, this whole ZQRX program, it starts with what you mentioned before, our long-term relationships with wool farmers in New Zealand, right? We established, in 2018, we started what we call the long-term contracts. So with a number of growers, we signed 10-year supply contracts, which means that their wool will, we will take on their wool at a price, and that gives them stability, because they know for the next 10 years I can sell wool to Icebreaker, and therefore I don't have to be reliant on price and the market fluctuation in price, right? So that gives them the ability to invest in their farms, and that's where ZQRX comes. Once we've given them that stability, then we, together with the New Zealand Merino Company, we propose to them to start to switch to regenerative practices, right? So say, okay, you have these amazing stations in the Southern Alps of New Zealand. If you've mentioned you haven't been here, but you go to these stations and they honestly look like a national park in any other country. It's absolutely stunning. And it was proposed to them to start to practice that regenerative agriculture. And I'm quite happy to say that we originally, last year, we had 55 growers engaged in our long-term supply contract, and now we moved it up to 70. So an increase of 15 in 1 year. And all those 70 guys have signed up to ZQRX. So they have already started to implement changes in the way they manage their farms to eventually become regenerative. And I think, interestingly, we've talked about a lot about in the past about regenerative and what it means. And there is a bit of direct linking regenerative with carbon sinking. And it is true. But that is a consequence of a number of interventions in the farm that promote biodiversity, that enhance water cycles, that improve soil health, and therefore that reduces carbon. So that's what we are currently doing with these 70 farmers, is get them to work on all those three factors, work on improving your biodiversity, work on improving your water cycles, and that will bring an improvement to soil health. And the next phase of that is to then measure. We need to measure all those interventions or mitigation actions. We need to measure how much effect they have in carbon reduction. And that's the... Right now, we are developing a tool together with the New Zealand Merino Company to be able to give the farmers the ability to read, okay, I invested X amount and I've done X amount of mitigation actions. How was that? Did it work? All right, okay, I've reduced my carbon emissions by X amount. So that's where we're going to get them to improve, to implement actions, and then to be able for them to measure, and obviously to give us that measurement to the brand, so we can then transfer it to the product and say, at some stage, be able to say how much impact reduction has been in this product compared to a non-regenerative product.
I think that's really interesting. It shows, I think it's evidence of where the sort of essential building blocks of transparency, and, you know, specific to carbon in this case, where it's, you start to get into measuring things, where you start to get into quantifying improvement, and then that leads you eventually to being able to disclose things to the consumer with confidence, right? It leads you to having the same degree of sort of transparency you have around where the wool comes from, for example, what the product journey is, but it starts to assess the overall impact as well. Now, obviously you've talked about the narrowness of the supply chain, you know, using the best quality merino wool. I know there's also a commitment that's made to reduce reliance on synthetics and plastics where that exists, however minimal that is at the moment. I'm interested to see what challenges you might run into when it comes to only using natural materials. Like, what is there anything that you haven't been able to find an adequate bio-based alternative for? And if you could design an ideal material there, what might that be?
I mean, not to overstate what we do, but you know, like, I think merino wool is pretty good material in terms of like what it does. It seems to have a huge amount of natural properties to it that they're not possible to replicate as a synthetic, right? So we started with something that does a pretty good job, and that's our base for things. And then we have found some pretty good materials that are plant-based. For instance, Lyocell Tencel, it's a very interesting material, both from sustainability perspective, but also it brings a very good performance qualities. And we're starting to push a bit the boundaries what can be done with organic and BCI cotton. Like, we tend to think of cotton as not a very performance-oriented material, but I think with specific treatments, specific manufacturing methods, you can reach pretty good quality. So we have a product is about to be released that provides, it's a cotton shell that has windproof resistance and water repellency. So, you know, it's starting to get there with the type of benefits that you would expect from synthetics. And yeah, in terms of, there is always a very small need for us to use certain amount of synthetics. So to put it into perspective, out of our whole collection, 95% of the fibers we use are either natural or plant-based. So if you were to put all the volume of fabric we buy in a year and put it into a warehouse, you'll have 95% of that warehouse full of merino wool, tencel, cotton, linen, and then only 5% will be synthetic or petrochemical synthetic. So the policy for us is always only use synthetic when absolutely necessary, when we've explored all the options, like, okay, guys, we cannot achieve what we were after. maybe we need to put a little bit of bio-based elastane or bio-based nylon into the fabric. And we, as I said, we have two very good options for bio-based products, which we will be releasing in the coming seasons. And with those materials, we are pretty much able to reach most of the features that we need in terms of, you know, continuing to be a performance brand, right? Delivering functional benefits to the consumer. Yeah, we're pretty good set on that sense. Now, my ideal material, what would it be? Maybe, you know, natural fibers tend to be staple fibers or short fibers sort of span together. And that maybe has a little bit of a compromise in strength. So we need to work around, re-engineer a lot of the fabrics to work around that feature. It'll make my life easier if we will have a natural material that is sort of a filament of sorts, right? So it's a strong material that you don't need to, you know, work so much in the fabric to achieve a better performance. We're always on the hunt for these things. And in the past, we've worked with startups and we established a relationship with Spinova last year to try to achieve this type of materials, and still ongoing. So hopefully soon we'll have some good outcome out of it.
Perfect. Great answer. I think, you know, beyond materials, there's also the overproduction question when it comes to sustainability, right? Because I think Icebreaker's philosophy that nature has the answer, that seems to tap into the need for that delicate balance between production and demand, not making more than the market needs and not making more than the planet can sustain. What, in your opinion, is it going to mean for the apparel industry as a whole, beyond, you know, within Icebreaker and beyond, to find that right balance between demand and production, where the fashion industry is not overproducing the way it is now?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because obviously, you know, the consumer wants newness, so that's driving overconsumption. Like, unfortunately, we get bored of stuff pretty fast and like, oh, I need a new color. So for us, it means that we, first and foremost, we want to create durable products. So we want to, in a sense, in going and buying an Icebreaker, it should be an investment. You're buying a product, it's going to last you a number of years. And, you know, it's gonna perform and it's going to have the quality attribute for a number of years, so you don't have to quickly dispose and get a new one. But there is obviously all these re-commerce and you know, repair interventions that some brands are doing, even in our own group. And I do see a lot of potential in that, in terms of giving the consumer a certain feeling for newness without having to go back and extract new raw materials to produce new products. So recirculating products, it's to me a very interesting option. But I do still think that a certain amount of intervention into the product to give it a new face is needed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you just almost enter the second-hand market, and that's not what we're talking about. People want to feel like they're buying a quality, not new, but at least something that is, it has an appeal on trend and, you know, relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, because I think recirculation, people get hung up on you know, repairing things, or they get hung up on the secondary market, as you said, the used market, rehoming. But I do think there's an argument for bringing product, bringing material, bringing things back into the brand ecosystem, and then finding ways to update that to be relevant stylistically, to have, you know, maybe the right set of performance characteristics, whatever it takes to give it some degree of newness without introducing entirely new materials and entirely new processes into the supply chain. So how do you monitor your supply chain? Like, how is your relationship with your growers systematized from like a technology point of view? And where are you making use of technology systems to secure transparency from source to consumer? Because the Interline is, we're a technology publication for the fashion industry. So there's obviously a big fashion industry component to that. But we always try to look at industry issues through a technology lens. So I'm keen to see where technology plays a role in your, you know, your sustainability and transparency initiatives?
So I won't be able to tell you much about the technology itself. At the end of the day, I'm the receiver of the information almost. Mm-hmm. But what we do have, like, we know that through the Merino, the New Zealand Merino Company, we have auditing platforms for our growers. So the growers get audited in our cycle, and then all of them need to be audited. And the same goes for the different levels of our supply chain, you know. So from the growers to the wool top treatment plant and to the yarn spinners and so forth and so on. So the whole supply chain of Icebreaker gets audited regularly, like I think around in a 2-year cycle. And then if something it's not up to scratch or there is any issue, then development plans are issued to the different partners to make sure that they implement corrective actions, right? And if they don't implement corrective actions over a period of time, then, you know, more strict actions are put into place. So it's a strict process and something that, you know, in Icebreaker we are very, very strict about the compliance of our supply chain. It's very important, yeah.
Not to end on a pessimistic note, but there's a sort of feeling out there among certain people that when it comes to sustainability, it's too late to make significant change. The planet, things are too far gone from a climate change perspective. I believe there's that kind of leads people towards what you might call like perfection paralysis, where they're saying, well, if I'm not going to be able to make a massive difference by myself, is it worth doing the smaller things? I'd like us to end this by encouraging other brands to take positive action, however small those positive actions might feel. And I think, you know, as a leader at Icebreaker and yourself, I think it's important for listeners to hear from you and to recognize that sustainability, transparency, it's a fight that's still worth being in for not just commercially speaking, but for all our sakes.
Definitely. I think as someone working in sustainability, I believe it's not too late. And I believe we really need to take action. I also believe that it's urgent. You know, I don't think we should think, oh, it's still time, don't worry about it. I think we should worry about it very much, but it's not too late. I think every action that every company in the world takes is going to make a difference. And I truly believe that the speed at which we're moving perhaps is too slow. So that sense of urgency needs to increase. It's business as usual, in a sense, is no longer applicable. You know, the planet has shown us that the model in which we build our society and our consumption rate is not sustainable, and the planet will not take it for much longer. So we're still in time to take action. And that's where, you know, from our side, what we can affect from the impact that we have in the planet, we are definitely committed to reduce that. So it won't be up to us to stay idle and do nothing. We will do as much as we can to make sure that we are improving or at least minimizing our impact in the planet. But everyone needs to get up and do whatever's in their hands to change, because small changes add to big change, right? So everybody should be going at it with all they got. And, you know, the industry should be investing in this, like one of their highest KPIs, because it's, you know, our survival goes on it. So we just need to really all have a strong sense of urgency.
That's a great way to conclude, I think. The only follow-on question I would be is, if you were to speak to any other brand and they were to say, well, what would be a small thing? What would be somewhere that I could begin to make a positive impact, the way that I could begin to do something that's measurable? Where would you recommend they start?
One of the key things I found is that understanding your supply chain is key to make changes, because I do believe that there's a lot of companies out there trying to do the right thing, but perhaps not having all the information at hand. So when they are wanting to claim a certain sustainability benefit, perhaps they need to go back to the roots of how they make that product and understand, am I truly saying the right thing here? And if you go back through your supply chain, then you can identify the areas where perhaps, you know, sustainability or good practices are not happening and change that. If that partner in your supply chain is not willing to change, my advice is to find another one that is willing to change, because, you know, it's not an option to keep working with partners that are not wanting to implement correct practices and, you know, to move forward with better environmental practices. So yeah, supply chain visibility to me, it's key. And information, like, make sure that everything that you are saying in terms of sustainability claims is substantiated and you have the right proof, because otherwise misleading the consumer to think that a product is sustainable when it's not, it's really not helping anyone.
Now, that inspiring message brings us to the end of this episode. Hopefully this conversation has underscored the need for fashion to act and act quickly on sustainability and transparency. Not with words, but in a way that's both measurable and commensurate with the scale of the problem. Not just because it's what the market demands, but because it's what planet and people need. I'd also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Coats Digital, again. Across its core strategic pillars of talent, digital, innovation, and sustainability, Coats Digital's ecosystem of connected technologies is helping brands, retailers, and suppliers, businesses like yours, to conduct precisely this sort of long-term digital transformation across labor and materials, as well as PLM, factory capacity planning, and a suite of other solutions. Coats Digital is working with both new and existing customers to secure real-world insights that will ultimately strengthen and future-proof their businesses at the same time. You can find out more by visiting coatsdigital.com. In the meantime, I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks for listening.